in Latin American politics. How will they let this survive? To which the Latin American leaders say, thank God for the Iraqi resistance. It's keeping them busy and occupied for the time being. That's what they say when they talk to each other. Their minds are off Latin America at the moment. Nonetheless, the lesson has to be learnt that a continent united is difficult to defeat. And so a lot of discussions are taking place, even with people of differing views, saying, let's settle our own problems together. Let's not allow them to intervene. That is what is going on. And lastly, we should not feel too demoralized about the anti-war movements. We've had ups and we've had downs, successes and failures. That's always the way. To imagine that we could keep up the same level of mobilization that we had on February the 15th was utopian. How could we? You can't do it because those people were not organized by any single organization. February the 15th was a rebellion of citizens against their governments, which they believed were lying to them. And they came out in their millions globally to try and stop this unjust war, which should never have taken place. And when the war happened anyway, many of them became demoralized. Others said, we can't do anything, and retreated. That didn't mean they accepted the war. They retreated for the time being. And when the time came, they punished their governments. The Spanish people voted out Aznar, who had gone to war. And the Spanish socialist leader Zapatero said, in the run-up to the election campaign, long before the terrorist attack, if elected, we will take the troops out of Iraq within 3 weeks. When they were elected, many of us, hardened cynics, said, now we'll see. I was in Barcelona the day he announced in Parliament that the troops were being withdrawn. And the whole city erupted. I've never seen anything like it. People hugging each other because they felt they'd won. And they won by electing a government which they felt would do it. And it did it. And in Italy today, Berlusconi is in very serious trouble. Another warmonger leader. He lost 8 out of the 10 regional elections. The centre-left is poised to win, and knowing that the big division between the centre-left and the centre-right is not on economics, but on the war, Berlusconi is saying, perhaps in December we will pull all our troops out. That's the effect it's having. Even in Britain, for the first time, the question of troop withdrawal is being discussed openly now by some Labour politicians, not Blair. Blair won, but unlike Australia and the United States, where you had Conservative politicians who were given a boost, Blair suffered some heavy blows. The anti-war movement in Britain scored a big victory by overturning a 10,000-strong Labour majority and electing George Galloway to Parliament. On an anti-war ticket. We did it. We did it, elected anti-war candidates from other parties in a number of other constituencies. So the British anti-war movement does not feel demoralized. And these are the lessons we have to learn, because political consciousness globally is uneven and always will be. February the 15th was amazing, but we shouldn't even think it can be repeated. It was one of those rare events in world history. Can't use that as the criteria. We've got to think ingeniously, creatively, of how to move forward. And that means being engaged. That means breaking with the routines that neoliberal globalization imposes on people, both the well-off and the poor. And the routines it imposes are to live in a world dominated by consumerism and dominated by pap on television and dominated by news bulletins by and large in the Western world, which don't tell you about what's really going on in that world. So you lose the capacity to make serious judgments as citizens in a democratic society. And this process of hollowing out democracy has to be challenged. And it can only be challenged from below by activity, by not relying on the corrupt political elites of center-left and center-right that have shown themselves incapable of doing anything to defend the interests of their citizens. That's the world we're living in today. I mean, when you look at this country, yesterday by some accident I picked up the Australian. There wasn't any other paper on the plane. And what was the headline? Some absurd nonsense by the Australian foreign minister, saying that the previous leaders of the Labour Party were traitors and had not pulled their weight and were appeasers. Appeasers? What? He was attacking Gough Whitlam for pulling out Australian troops from Vietnam. Basically, that's what he was doing. So what you have is that the economic system has produced now a generation of politicians who can be right or supposedly from the center-left like Blair, who are unpleasant, nasty, and who will use anything to reach the lowest common denominator of politics. And they have to be challenged because they think in this way they can permanently maintain the consent of the people for what they're doing. And look, they're not going to get away with it forever. But what we have to try and do, not in a sectarian way of narrow construction of organizations, but learn from some of the successes of building mass movements, of building different forms of organization which offer some hope to the young people and get them actively engaged in politics again. In the last two British elections, a majority of those between the ages of 18 and 26 didn't bother to vote at all. That's the same thing which happens in the United States. I don't know what the figures here are. You have compulsory voting here, so people could be locked up if they don't vote. But it isn't the case in other parts of the world. There's been a decline. So these are things which affect us all, and they are not unrelated to the form of the economy that has been imposed. Because if center-left and center-right have no basic differences on the economy, then what do they differ on, do you see? It makes a challenge by the mainstream parties to each other totally hollow. And it creates a vacuum. And in this vacuum often comes reactionary forms of religion. You know, people go on about the Islamic world being obsessed with religion, which, by the way, I challenge, but anyway. But I don't know whether it was my imagination, but I was pretty horrified by the coverage given to the death of the last pope. I mean, weeks and weeks of coverage of an old guy who's trying to die. Let him die, leave him alone. And then bury him. What's this going on? They had nothing to say outside the Vatican. Is he still alive? Yes, he's struggling on. How can he struggle on? And then the new guy who's put in his place. Massive coverage. And how they all rush. He was a member of the Hitler Youth, but that was mandatory. Like hell it was mandatory. I know lots and lots of Germans who didn't join, who joined the army because that was mandatory. It wasn't mandatory to join the Nazi Party or its youth organization. This guy was a Bavarian, sympathetic to them, did it. Fine, don't hold it against him, but don't try and write it off. The most reactionary elements in the Catholic Church are now in power. They've attacked liberation theology. They've attacked the rights of women. They refuse people the right to use contraception, even in cases of severe AIDS. They pulled everything back. And yet there are people who turn to them, and the politicians now try and use them. The same politicians who constantly attack the Islamic world are the same politicians who use religion the most in their own countries, Bush and Blair. That's what they do. So, in this world, we have to again try and revive social alternatives. Because people feel there's something missing. There's a vacuum. There's a gap. And that is why we have to fight for our own spaces in the media, outside the media, dissenting spaces, on every level in our culture, not least in the ability to distribute books. The chains have taken over large parts. The same chains are everywhere now. Borders, Barnes & Noble, Waterstone, you name them. And those independent bookstores who survive have to be helped. Even on that level, one should think before one decides where to buy a book. Don't buy it from these damn chains. Why should one? And they've made bookstore into a commodity. So you have the same airport bestsellers displayed in every single shop in the whole Western world. And translated very rapidly into French and German. That is what this culture is doing. That's what globalization is about. So fighting, we don't just have to think about fighting the war. We do that automatically. But it's also what this system now is beginning to do to our culture. And we have to think in broad sweeps in order to create a new way of thinking and new alternatives which meet the challenges which globalization has thrown to us. Thank you.